Hello, my darlings. This is Taj. On this week's episode of Risk, you'll hear Carlos Kotkin.
I say, you know what? I think you're feeling a little self-conscious because I'm sitting right next to you. So I'm going to go. Which I acknowledge is not a standard move. But I felt like the date would go better if I wasn't there. And,
that and a whole lot more. But before we get into all that, do you have a dream of one day telling a story on the Risk podcast? Pitch us for one of our radio-style recordings, where you'll tell your story from home rather than on stage. Just like the incredibly moving story we're going to hear from Alistair in a little bit. Just send us a 300-word pitch to pitches@risk-show.com or go to risk-show.com/submissions to see our guidelines and tips for submitting your story.
We'll be right back.
The new £5 meal deal from McDonald's. Get a cheeseburger or mayo chicken, medium fries, 4 McNuggets, and a medium soft drink for guess what? That's right, £5. Yeah. It's not called the £5 meal deal for nothing. From 11 a.m. Not available on delivery. Carbonated soft drink upgrade fees apply. Participating restaurants subject to availability.
Now here's the show. Darlings, this is Risk, the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. I'm Taj Easton, sitting in this week for Kevin Allison, and this is Les Baxter in the background now. And we're calling this week's episode The Real Me, as today we are bringing you stories about the real human beings behind the personas we present to the world. Very soon we're going to hear from Alistair, but before that, I'm hoping you're going to enjoy this comical little yarn from Carlos Kotkin, whose storytelling prowess is matched only by his humble charm and playfully funny banter. Carlos is an accomplished writer and storyteller. As you're about to hear, he has a history of wowing audiences at the Moth, has written for the New York Times, and his book, Please God Let It Be Herpes, A Heartfelt Quest for Love and Companionship, is for sale on his website and many other places where you will find such fine publications as this. Here's Carlos Kotkin now with the story we call This Is Me.
I'm not proud of this, but I guess that's the reason why I'm here. So I, as you can imagine, based on the title of my book, I have no game. All right, let's just start out with that. I have no game. I did speed dating when speed dating was a thing, and I had dates with 35 women. And out of those 35 women, 35 of them never wanted to see me again. I was at a party once, and I ended up on a couch sitting to these two very attractive women. This is my small talk. I said to them, I looked at them, I said what I was thinking, which was, you guys look pretty tired, maybe you should go. Didn't work out with them. I went out on a blind date with a woman who was actually blind. My mother set that up, and the blind woman was not attracted to me. So there you go, That's the baseline. That's the baseline. It was just one humiliation after another until one day I went to a story slam, which they told me not to mention, and then Gail said it three times. So it's the Moth. I went to a Moth story slam, and the theme of the night But in case you're not familiar with it, it's a storytelling show like this. Although at the end, when you're done telling your story, judges give you a score as if you've just figure skated. So people will come on stage and pour their hearts out and say that, and that's the reason why my dad never loved me. And then they'll go, 7.2, 7.2. As opposed to this show where you're all judging me silently. So I go to this show that I will not name, and the theme is inspiration. And I tell the story about the blind date that I had with the blind woman, because even though it didn't work out romantically, she was inspiring. And I was the fourth storyteller of the night. I sit back down. The last storyteller of the night, the 10th storyteller, was a woman named Hazel. Hazel was my friend. And that's how I figured out that she was there. And what I didn't know was when I went up, Hazel turned to her friend, a young woman named Erin. And instead of saying, oh, that's Carlos, I know him. He's my friend. I've known him a long time. He's friends with my husband. She didn't say that. She said, this guy. He always wins. Yeah, huh. I thought we were friends, but she says, this guy. And I didn't know she was there. And then she goes up. She tells the 10th story. She sits back down. She didn't win because I won. That part doesn't matter. I've won 14 times at the Moth. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. What matters is, at the end of the show, I walked over to her to say hello, and I met her friend, Erin. And Erin shook my hand and said, congratulations. And I said, thank you. And in my mind, I had two distinct thoughts. One was, it would be very pleasant to take a shower with this woman. And two, I would like to marry her. I didn't say those things. I just said thank you and left it at that. But I thought about her for several more days, and I thought I could call Hazel and get her number and I could ask her out. But I thought that seemed shallow because it's just congratulations, thank you. What am I supposed to say? Hey, I really like the way you congratulated me the other night. Maybe we should grab dinner. And anyway, I'm not good at these things. So instead of doing that, I decided in my geniusness that I would put a show together like this one. I've never done that before. I'd put a show together. I would host it. I would tell a story. I would be amazing. And then she would look at me and she would say, I must have him. That was my plan. So I called this venue in Burbank, a comedy club, and I told him I want to do a show. I didn't tell anybody that it was a fake show just to impress a girl. I booked it. I got performers. I put it on social media. I did the whole thing. And then I called or emailed Hazel and I said, hey, I'm doing this show on such and such date. Can you bring your friend Erin? And she called me back instead of replying. And she called. She said, why do you want me to bring Erin? And I said, oh, because it's a big show. It's really important. I'm trying to fill the venue. She said, do you like Erin? I said, no, she just seemed nice. I have lots of nice friends. Why do you want me to bring my nice friend Erin? You like her? And I said, yes, yes, I like her. Please don't tell her that. Just bring her. That's all I said. I didn't say that I put the... Anyway, the next day, Hazel has lunch with Erin, and she says, my friend Carlos is doing a show, and he wants you to go because he likes you. And Erin had to catch her breath. She was excited that I liked her because she liked me. And the reason I know this is because Hazel called and told me. She said, but don't tell her. I was like, all right, no, okay. The night of the show comes. I'm super nervous. I'm standing by the entrance. She walks in. Erin walks in, and I don't want her to see how nervous I am, so I decide to play it cool. I decide to pretend like I can't remember her. It's like, didn't I see you at the? Meanwhile, I'm thinking I've arranged this entire event for you. And she pretends like she can't remember me. She's like, oh, yeah, you told that story at that other show. Yeah, but she's thinking you specifically requested my presence. So we do the show, and it is great. You would have loved me. And then afterwards, I have a genuine conversation with her, and I'm able to ask her out, and she says yes. And it turns out, we're in Burbank, turns out we live two blocks away from each other, and sound, yes, soulmate. soulmate. In Los Angeles, I could walk to her. So I thought, don't screw this one up, right? So our first date, it is Los Angeles, so I drove to her. And then she said, where are we going? And I said, we're going to a hotel. I was nervous. And she gave me a look. I said, to a hotel restaurant, the top of the hotel. It's a restaurant. It's you like it. And we went there, beautiful views and everything. But it was packed. There's like all these people, but they were all talking at once. We couldn't hear anything. I just remember she was at one point shouting at me. She said, by the way, you can never talk about me at one of your shows. And I promised her, never. It'll never happen. She's not here tonight, so it doesn't matter. So then I say, also I scream at her, if you want, we can go back to my place where we can actually hear each other. And she said yes, and I almost passed out. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. So we're sitting in my apartment, sitting on my couch. I'm sitting next to her. I'm terrified because I like her so much. I don't know what to say. I don't know. I can't make it. I'm just sitting there. And finally, this is the part that I'm not proud of. This is what I came up with. I said, you know what? If you want, I can pull up videos of other shows of mine. And we can do, yes, yes, exactly. That's the right reaction. And I remember I should have picked up on it when she was like, okay. So I pull up one of my shows and we sit on the couch together and we watch me. And it's supposed to be funny, but she's like Mount Rushmore, just totally, she's a statue. And I'm starting to sweat. And so I finally pause it. And I say, you know what? I think you're feeling a little self-conscious because I'm sitting right next to you. So I'm going to go. And I left. I left my apartment. I walked out of the date, which I acknowledge is not a standard move. But I felt like the date would go better if I wasn't there. And, so I left, I set a timer on my phone. I was out of my apartment. She was in my apartment by herself watching my shows for 10 minutes. And then I came back in and she was still there. So that was positive. And I sit back down on the couch and she's quiet. And she said, I enjoyed, are you okay? Yeah, I feel your pain. I was there. And she said, that was, I enjoyed your video. Thank you. And then I guess she felt like she had to go through it, not around it. So she said to me, I have to say, this is the weirdest date I've ever been on. And that was very encouraging to me because she said the word date. And so I said to her, oh, is this a date? I was 98% sure it was a date, but not 100. So I'm glad that you mentioned it was a date. And since it's a date, would it be okay if we officially made it a date? And she said, yes. And then I don't want to kiss and tell, but we kissed. And we've been married 12 years. Thank you very much.
AI might be the most important innovation ever. It's storming every industry with literally billions being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs the right data and a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? Time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, and application development with AI embedded across it all. And Oracle Sovereign Cloud helps you address your requirements for location, access, and data residency. OCI provides blazing fast speeds for AI's demanding workloads. And in the cloud, when you pay by the minute, speed matters. And of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. If you want OCI to help you do more and spend less, like Uber, the Premier League, and Oracle Red Bull Racing, take a free test drive at oracle.com/bandwidth. That's oracle.com/bandwidth. oracle.com/bandwidth.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. We tried to figure out who killed Margaret Kuhn.
She told me I'm going to kill you. I said, well, do it, bitch. Go ahead and do it.
We delved into the violent world of the Dixie Mafia.
I'm an outlaw, and I was a thief, but I'm far from being the psychotic nutcase that I've been made out to be.
And we tracked a serial killer in Laredo, Texas.
Just turn around, please. Turn around. Hey.
Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. So, in Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. I'm Jed Lipinski. Welcome back to Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast. Listen and follow now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts for new episodes every week.
Thinks he's flying, is also known as a buster. Always talking about what he wants and just sits on his broke ass soul.
No,
I don't want your number.
No,
I don't wanna give you mine. And
no,
I don't wanna meet you nowhere.
No,
I don't want none of your time. And
no, I don't want no scrub. A scrub is a guy that can't get no love from me. Hanging on the passenger side of his best friend's ride.
This is Risk. This is TLC in the background now, and we just heard from Carlos Kotkin, who you can find at www.carloskotkin.com. Folks, one of our Patreon patrons, Jason, recently sent us this little note with their donation during our struggle to keep Risk running. I love the stories about polyamorous couples. I had your very run-of-the-mill judgments about that lifestyle until I listened to some of the stories and realized how that kind of love can be really elevated and super sweet. Thank you very much for that note, Jason. Risk has been a vehicle for discovery and widening perspectives for me as well. And getting notes like this from our fans is super encouraging. And for our Patreon supporters, we have a new bonus story out right now from Dylan Adler, and that sounds a little bit like this.
We were the first people that we each ever came out to. Sophomore year of high school, he came up to me. I could tell he was really nervous. He was like, Dylan, I don't know, I think I might be attracted to guys. And I was like, ew! Don't ever say that again! But then, a year later, I was like, same.
And there's plenty more where that came from, plus an ad-free feed of the podcast, all at patreon.com/risk. Next, we're going to hear from Alistair. This story means a great deal to me. I had an incredible time working with Alistair on it, from the coaching through the sound design. And I was just going to have to speak for itself. This story is amazing. It takes you on a real journey from the surface to the core of a human being. And that's a pretty special thing to do in 20 minutes. Less than 20 minutes. Without further ado, here's Alistair with a story we call Beyond Belief.
First time it really started to feel real, like something beyond just my furtive online searches to figure myself out, was when I got the email. This email seemed very official. It was purportedly from the producer of a reality TV show. In this show, they had on people from alternative lifestyles to basically share their lifestyle with normal people and let them compete. The premise was silly, but it was fascinating, so I'd watched it with a group of friends. I started to get really excited because it was real. This is real. This is happening. And it was amazing. It was the only thing I could think about at the back of my mind for days. They wanted me to come on as a representative of my community. And this community was something that seemed too good to be true. I had always felt out of step. Most teenagers do, though, so nobody paid that much attention to it, no matter how much I tried to ask my parents for help. But eventually, I found myself online in the early days of dial-up internet, Googling, what the hell is wrong with me? And eventually, I found a website. I still remember the way it looked, because it was very striking. And it was a black background with this 7-pointed silver star with rainbow in the background behind the star. The article said, 10 signs you might be an otherkin. What an otherkin is, basically, is somebody who feels like their soul was out of step with their body. They didn't belong in this body and this life that they were living, and it was because they weren't human. This list contained things like, you've never felt at home, or you feel like people don't understand you, or you feel like you don't look the way you're supposed to. And since I checked every single thing on that list, I remember just kind of sitting there with it for a minute and going, huh. I went out into the yard and I climbed up into my favorite tree. As I sat there on the branch, I was debating, can this be real? Can this be true? It sounds crazy. And yet it is the only thing that I have ever heard that makes sense and actually captures how I feel. I want to cry. So, okay, I guess I'm an elf. Once that was decided, I started looking for others of my kind online. There were a couple of forums that were fairly active back in this time. The feeling of welcome on the boards was incredible. To have a community just be like, we are so, so happy you're here. Welcome back because you've always belonged here. It felt so good because I was so lonely. And suddenly these people also understood not only the loneliness, but the feeling completely out of step in a way that nobody else around me really understood. Nobody got that I just didn't feel at home. But these people did. And half of them are like, hey, I think we were family in a past life. So not only did I have friends, but I had family. And since my family was dysfunctional, that was huge to me. I had one friend that I started calling father because we decided that in a past life, we'd been parent and child. And it was incredible to have that kind of a connection and the validation right off the bat, just yes, this is where you belong. But the validation from the outside world came in the form of that email. Like, okay, yes, this is real. This is a real thing that people outside of the community also know exists, and you are being looked at as a potential representative of it. That season 2 never got greenlit, and I never heard back. And I'm glad, because, boy, that would have been so embarrassing to have that exist. But I was curious and I was willing to do it because it would have been more validation. And it would have been a few weeks getting to live as an elf full time with everybody around me acknowledging it. Of course, I tried to do that in my daily life around school and work. I would put on the pointy ears and I would wear them around and we would take photos dressed up in fancy embroidered elven tunics. There were a couple of days when I wore some really long points to work, and I had my hair long, and it would cover the joins between the silicone ears and my natural ear, so you couldn't see it because it was buried under my hair. One day I was up at the register, and a middle-aged soccer mom-looking woman comes up to me, because that was the majority of our clientele at this health food store. She came up to me, and she looked at those ears, and she said, You wouldn't want those for real. I know you wouldn't. And I was kind of taken aback because until that point everybody had been confused but affable about it. But she wanted me to know that I did not want this. I said, no, I wish my ears were pointed. And she just got this closed off, pinched look on her face. It just reinforced to me that so many people just didn't understand. At home, I would also wear the ears, and we'd sometimes, my group of friends and I, which consisted of a local dragon and a couple of other elves, we would put on our clothes and we would go out to scenic locations and take photos in our garb with our pointed ears and our whatever made us feel the most like ourselves. And there's this one photo where I was wearing a long frock coat and I had my hair thrown back over my shoulder. My hair was shining golden in the sun, and there was the pointed ears, and I was smiling broadly in this photo, and that almost never happened. I hated having my photo taken. I never liked the way I looked. It never felt right. It always looked awkward and forced and unnatural, but somehow those pointed ears sticking out of my hair made the photo look right. And I thought, as I looked at that photo, yeah, that's it. That's the way I'm supposed to look. There I am. There was a group out in Kansas, of all places, that lived in a farm area out there. And so we flew out to go to an elven conference. You know, we're talking full Lord of the Rings here. This is what was happening. We were getting together and we were having a council of elves. We put together a little stream. We had our chairs circled around and we all sat there in full elven robes with like metal headpieces on. All of us had long hair, just sitting there in these full robes discussing how our group was going to make the world a better place. But the most remarkable thing about this trip was for those people who have never been out into the deep country, where there is nothing but fields as far as the eye can see and beyond it, is the blackness of night. And so one night, when the weather was particularly clear, we all put on our robes and we carried banners that had been painted and painstakingly hung on sticks, and we paraded down a long country road. The stars were above us. There were so many of them. It was astounding. I didn't know there could be that many stars. And then as we're parading down this road, you could practically hear the ethereal elven singing. And there was a culvert, and there was a bridge over this culvert. And as we crossed the bridge, the culvert was full of fireflies. And so they're just rising up from below us and just coming up on either side of us and above us and around us, just glowing and sparkling. And it felt like standing in a sea of stars. It was the most beautiful moment of my life. And I felt so relieved because I thought, yeah, this is what I'm missing. This is where I'm supposed to be. This is what home looks like. I still haven't gotten over it 20 years later, even with the way things went. It was beautiful. When things like that exist, you can almost believe you can put your hand out and you can just touch what is separating you from where you're supposed to be. And if you just push, you can get there. One thing that was very common in the other kinforms was this concept of a veil. And the veil is this plane, this curtain between our world and the world we're supposed to be in, where we will be ourselves again. We'll get to go home. It was always talked about as, I can't wait till the veil drops and we can go home. There were lots and lots of conversations where people would say, I think it's falling soon, because if it's not, I cannot take this anymore. There was so much yearning and grief in so many of these conversations. People would say, I dreamt last night that I saw my dragon mother and she welcomed me home and I finally felt at peace for the first time in my life. Or I thought I saw the trees and they were singing to me. and I just need to get there. Why can't I get there? Why can't I get there? It was intense, this feeling of being out of body and out of place all the time. And like, there's just, it's almost there. You can almost see it, but you can't get there. So I left the community. The longing feelings and the feeling out of sorts, that never went away. That was always there. But I ignored it. I pushed it aside. I went to college, got married, and I tried to pretend that everything was fine and I was perfectly normal. All the while, I knew I wasn't. And I knew what the problem was. I'd always known what the problem was. So I went out to dinner with my best friend of 25 years because I had something I needed to say to her. It was something I needed to say to a lot more people, but you know, I figured she was a safe place to start because she'd put up with me through a lot and she was less likely to freak out and bail on me than anybody else. Even though I knew I wasn't going to lose her friendship when I said what I had to say, it was still hard. So we got all the way through dinner and dessert. And it wasn't until we were walking back to our cars, we were downtown, it was warm. I remember the smell of the streets. I'm looking at my feet, and she's walking next to me, and I finally say, "So, here's the thing. I'm trans." And she looks at me, and she goes, "Yeah. I know. You were saying that in high school. I'm not sure how this is supposed to be news." Because, after all, I had been. All through high school, I was telling her in great detail and at great length that I was an elf, that I was a male elf. And she had rolled her eyes at the elf part, but she'd heard the rest of it. And she went, "Yeah, I know. I just didn't know you were going to do anything about it." I said, "Ah. Well, okay then." That went better than I expected. After that, it was a pretty easy process. Some people were surprised. My parents, oddly enough, seemed to have been the most surprised, even though they were there for the very, very earliest signs. There were a lot of trans people in the otherkin community. We didn't use that word. We talked around it. We said, "In this life, I'm a man, but in the past, I was a female dragon, and so I live with my partners as a female dragon." And nobody questioned. Nobody messed up pronouns. It was just a given. No question, no comment, no notes, next. The few that I've kept track of, I'd say probably about half of us have come out since. I don't think that anyone that I still talk to still believes that they were an elf, because it served its purpose. But for that time period, when representation was so non-existent, this was a way to cope. Honestly, at the end of the day, there's still only so far that I can go, because no matter what I do, no matter what procedures or surgeries or medications I take, no matter how I change my hair or my clothes or how I move through the world, the fact is still, I was born wrong. This isn't the body that my brain's supposed to go to. Knowing that is still really, really hard at the end of the day. Nothing can fix that. And that's just reality.
Hello.
This is Risk. This is the Kinks in the background now, and we just heard from Alistair. Alistair, who is pretty focused on his poetry these days, can be found at alistairjcraft.my.canva.site. Next week is a very special, very haunting, very dubious and eerie week here at Risk, because we will be bringing you loads of new Halloween stories. And we'll be warming you up for all that this Thursday with our rerun of Scary Stories number 2, Ick. That's a lot of quality, creepy content coming at you. But that's Thursday, and that's next week. And today is the day. Take a risk. Girls will be boys and boys will be